This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Alice Steinke from Blufftail, Texas. And you are listening to a special trail riding episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 18th, 2016. Episode 1498, brought to you by the North American Trail Ride Conference. Good morning, Horse World.
Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're out. We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us here at Horses in the Morning on this Thursday. Of course, Alice is here the third Thursday of every month, and every time I think, wow, it's another month already. It's just flying by. But
it's because we're getting old.
I guess. It does go faster the older you get. That thing is true, what they say. Well, we have, speaking of time flying by, it's still Olympic time, and we have to talk a little bit about that and kind of give you an Olympic update this morning because it's show jumping time at the Olympics. So let's find out what's going on. Well, the team show jumping gold medal was determined yesterday, and that was a second gold medal in team by France. France took the gold medal in the team competition, and we have to congratulate the silver medalists, the United States. Kent Farrington, Lucy Davis, B.Z. Madden, and McLean Ward were responsible for that. They won the bronze medal in 2014 in the World Championships. So, thank you, Jennifer. But they knew there was room for improvement, and they did. They got a silver this time. Of course, you know, one of them had to drop out. We lost Cortez C., B.Z. Madden's horse, because of a tendon injury before the jump-off yesterday. So Cortez was not part of the team, so they had to go on a three-person roster, which means that they didn't have a drop score at all. And they were still able to pull out the silver. The French just are doing great this year in the team competition. And they actually started out in fifth place before the rides yesterday and ended up taking home their second gold. And, of course, who would be always on the podium in anything equestrian at the Olympics? The Germans came in third because they just have to win something. They're that good. So that's how it ended up. Now, tomorrow, 45 of the top riders from the competition will compete for the individual gold, and that'll happen on Friday. So they get a day off.
That's good. The horses probably need to rest.
And that'll end the Olympics for the horse competitions. You know, the one thing I didn't see anything of this year, and I need to look it up, and we need to talk about it tomorrow, is the pentathlon. Because isn't there horses in that? There's a horse thing in that.
Yeah, it's like riding and running and shooting.
Yeah,
and
swimming and biking. Yeah, I got to check that out because I know there's horses involved in that, and we haven't covered it at all. I don't even know if they're done or they did it yet. See, aren't we bad?
It probably wasn't on TV, so we probably don't know.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's what's going on, and there's your update for the Olympics. Well, today we have a big show planned. We have Amy Martin coming on to talk about competitive mounted orienteering, which I think is kind of cool. That's a different sport. I hope that catches on all across the country. We also have Wayne Tolbert coming on to talk about his amazing Hall of Fame horse, Sienna. And then Chuck Smith to talk about something I like to do a lot, and that's cook. But he's going to be talking about camp cooking, right? How to cook when you're out camping and without all of your conveniences of your home kitchen. No granite countertops for he cooks.
I don't know. I hear he has a really fancy setup. So
oh, does
that could
he?
Be interesting. That's
all
what
right,
I hear.
Cool.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard.
Is he ready to give us a recipe or two?
I hope so.
Yeah,
I asked him to plan a couple.
So. You know, we used to do recipes on the show. Reese Koffler Stanfield used to come on and do recipes, and it was very popular. But she got busy and then started hosting Dressage Show. So we lost our recipe person. We need to find a new person to come on. If anybody's listening, wants to come on once a month and do recipes with us, let me know.
I can probably make that happen.
Good. Well, yeah, if you have somebody that's really good and entertaining, let's get them on.
Okay.
All right, cool. And you drove right by us, but we didn't. It was too late one night, and the other day it was too early.
Yeah, it was such a bummer because we got held up. I wanted ice cream one afternoon, and so we looked at the map, and we're like, oh, look, there's a place to get ice cream, and it's just off the highway, only it wasn't there. And we drove. Well, were we in Tallahassee when we did that? So by the time we found the ice cream and got back on the road, it had put us off schedule. That was really bummed.
It's all your fault. It's ice cream.
Well, I didn't really want the ice cream that bad. I mean, I did.
Yeah, but once you're committed,
not bad enough to miss you. Yeah, that's what Michael said. He said, yep. We're committed. We're off the
that's
road.
Right.
We're finding the ice cream.
That is true. When you get off the highway and you're on a trip and you have a mission for whatever it is and you can't find it, then you figure, well, I'm already into it this far. I might as well just keep looking.
That's exactly what happened. But yeah, it ended up costing us like 30 or 45 minutes, which just put us too far for your all's early morning. So,
You did a little cruise to the Bahamas.
Yes, it was on the Grand Celebration, and it was part of a timeshare sales package to which we said no, 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 and no.
How many times did you have to say no?
Well, at least 10 or 12. But the funny part is the guy kept saying, well, what do you do for vacation? And I said, well, I take my horses and my horse trailer and I go ride. And he says, well, where do you stay when you need a place to stay when you're doing this riding? And he's like, no, I sleep in my horse trailer. And he said, no, you have to have a place to stay. You can't sleep in. It's like, well, my horse trailer has a bed and a shower because I got a new trailer. I've upgraded.
Oh, so you have a living quarter. Yeah. You're not sleeping with the horses anymore.
Well, I wasn't before. I had like a little, actually my old trailer had bigger living quarters, but no bathroom. Now I have a smaller living quarters, but I actually have a shower
and
a bathroom.
I think the bathroom is the most important thing.
Exactly. And so, you know, my sales.
I'll take a smaller bed. Give me some place to go pee.
Yeah. Well, my old trailer is for sale. If anyone's looking for a really awesome trailer that isn't too expensive.
That doesn't have a toilet. It doesn't have a bathroom.
It doesn't have a bathroom, but most of the places where I ride have porta potties or bathrooms. So, and the back, you know, I had set up in the back. So it worked out okay. But anyway, so yeah, but they just kept saying, and then finally, he's just kept coming at us and coming at us. I said, well, you know, and they said, well, you could put this on your credit card. And I said, no, I'm a Dave Ramsey follower. I don't believe in having a credit card. And he just walked away.
So is that the magic now? We all have to remember Dave Ramsey. Just say those two words.
Yeah, I said, I'm sorry, I don't have a credit card. I follow Dave Ramsey. And he was just like, he was done.
Good for you.
So I remember that. But yeah, but I mean, the cruise was nice and the food was nice, and I'd never been out of the country before, so it was a really great little taste of, you know, I'm literally dipping my toes in the ocean.
Did they? You had to have a passport to do that now, right?
Yes.
Because years ago, you could just do it with your driver's license. If you're going to the Caribbean, you didn't even need a passport. But
yep, I got my passport. I went on July the 6th, and it was here when I got home from Colorado. So, I mean, it came really fast.
Yeah, they're pretty good about that now. Well, we have a product review for this week before we get to our first guest.
Yes. One of the things we did in Florida was go by a store called Cuda. And I found out about Cuda through my Pasofino friends because they have Pasofinos and they go to Pasofino shows. But they make tack for all horses. And my friend Teresa just got a really cool custom saddle from them. But the thing that I'm reviewing is they have these awesome stirrups and they are self-turning. They're English stirrups, like, you know, Western stirrups. There are different turners you can buy
Western stirrups are a bigger pain than the English, yes, actually, because they absolutely, you can't keep them turned.
Exactly. Like, yeah. And so I didn't realize for a while that they had a Western one. I mean, I bought the English ones for myself. And then I saw when we were in Ocala, we went to a Pasofino barn and watched the gentleman work one of his Pasofino stallions. And he had these stirrups that were self-turning for a Western saddle. Or was a, well, it wasn't, it was a, I don't think it was actually Western, but it had Western fenders on it. So it had the wider stirrups. And they had this extra bar on the top that makes the stirrups hang perpendicular to the saddle and to the horse. And I had already bought some for my English saddle and loved them. And then when I saw these Western saddles and he told me that we were only a few miles away from the Cuda store, we trotted right over there and bought Michael a pair of those for his Western saddle. And because he has trouble turning, his has a really new saddle, so the fenders don't want to turn. It'll be a lot easier on his knees. So they're super comfortable and super easy to use. And like, if you're ever paranoid about dropping your stirrup, it's just so much easier to pick up because, you know, like.
I often wondered why stirrups were made that way in the first place and why they weren't made to point in the correct direction. That never made any sense to me. I'm sure there's a reason and I'll get emails, but it never made any sense to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the English saddle is not a big deal because you just have that little leather. And even with my endurance saddle, it's maybe like a 2-inch leather instead of a 1-inch leather, but that's not a big deal to turn.
Yeah, but still, why wasn't it designed to point the stirrups in the correct direction? It just doesn't make, it never made any sense.
But if you run an English stirrup up, I mean, not that this is a reason, but I know like with my English stirrups, when you run them up, they all lay nice and flat.
Yeah. Okay. I get that.
You run them up and they stick out.
Yeah, right. True. Yeah. That is true. Okay, I'll give you that. But the Western, they're so hard to get back around. I mean, they're just so hard.
Oh, they are. They're, and you just have to like, so lean over and yeah, stick your foot
exactly,
in it. And then your horse does something stupid and you fall off over
exactly,
his shoulder. Yeah, it's not good.
Well, these are only $45 too. These double safety irons with cross loop.
Those are the English ones.
Yep.
I bought the Western ones, I think, were $80, but okay, still. But they're leather covered and they're really comfortable, you know, they're cool. I was really excited about them.
I never heard of this Cuda place either.
They're
out of Winter Garden, Florida. They're right below Orlando.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. It was just down the, but he told us how to get there. That's what it was. My whole vacation's gotten to be a big blur. Because
yeah, these are near Orlando. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was really easy to get to. It was right off the highway. And he, unfortunately, most of his tack was with him at a Pasofino show somewhere, but they make custom bridles and they had all kinds of nice colors. And there were guys in the back, like building saddles. We watched that for a little while and it was pretty neat.
Huh. And they even they must do a lot of them with Pasofinos because they have Pasofino hats and, you know, that
yeah,
they wear and all that stuff.
That's their main, I mean, that's been their main focus. But, you know, because I ride Pasofino, but I don't have one yet. I'm working on that. But their stuff is still universal and just good for trail in general. I was really impressed how so much of their stuff could be used by any breed.
Very cool. They have some unusual stuff in here too.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's yeah, they have some unusual. And then, oh, another thing I saw when I was,
and this is not a commercial, by the way.
No, it's not. It's just that they were just really cool. It was really interesting. But the trainer at the barn had this britching thing that he used. Oh, and I was like, you know, I've seen that like on driving horses.
I'm looking at it now. The rear end collector basket. I don't know.
Yeah, and I was asking him what it was, and he said that. He uses it as much to help a horse learn not to be spooky of its rear end as for collection.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like you could adjust it so it would have nothing to do with collection. It would probably be a good training device. Yeah, because driving horses have to learn about this because the harness comes right back there.
Right.
Yeah. Breaching.
But it was interesting. I mean, his was really loose, but he said it really helped the horses get over being, being nervous about things on their rear end.
All right, cool.
Jen says it's a bustle. Poor Jen. We should mention that Jen is voiceless today.
Yeah, she got, we came back from Ada of the trade show and she had the illness. See, anytime you go leave the house and actually talk and touch people, you get sick. So that's why we never leave the house.
Right.
Yeah. so yeah, she's a bit under the weather today. We're having to compensate. Well, we do have our first guest ready.
All right. Well, our first guest is a good friend of mine named Amy Martin. And we met at a competition in, I think, 2002 or 2003, something like that. And we've experienced lots of different trail sports and trail rides and fun rides and swimming in the lake, which she hates, and just all kinds of fun stuff through the years. And I want to welcome her to the show. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Amy. I am excited to be here today.
Well, one of the things we're going to talk about today is competitive mounted orienteering. It's something that you're very passionate about and have tried to get started in Texas for years and years. And maybe today we can actually launch something, this talk.
So, well, the organization themselves, they are more than happy and open to expanding their chapters at the National Association for Competitive Mounted Orienteering. Is they're really more popular up in the northern states, but they are happy to open one in Texas. Somebody just needs to step up and do it. And at the time, I was really too busy to take it on as like an actual organizational thing. I just put on some fun rides for my friends using the same concepts.
Right. But see, now you're about to lose a child's to college.
So yeah, I know. She's going to college.
You have free time now. So there you go. So explain the concepts of competitive mounted orienteering, and we'll just call it CMO from now on because I'm going to get tangled on that. And like what the purpose of the sport is and how it is useful in everyday trail riding.
Okay, that's a lot, but I will work on that. For competitive mounted orienteering, we know there's people orienteering where you get a map and you get a compass and you follow from station to station using your map along the map. I mean, using your compass to find your way along the map. But with horses, it was decided that, you know, you couldn't actually just go cross country. Sometimes you needed to follow established trails for erosion and maybe land, you know, whatever. So they came up with competitive mounted orienteering where you get a map and there'll be circles on the map. So maybe there'll be 10 circles on the map for the longer course. And you look at it and you decide which order you're going to go to them in, because whoever gets it done the fastest is the winner. And you can do it as an individual or in a team, depending on how it's set up. And you ride your horse to that circle area. And then on the back of the map, you'll have the objective stations listed out. And so maybe you've gone to circle one, and it will give you the clues. And it'll say maybe 80 degrees from the broken stump, 280 degrees from the tree hit by lightning. And maybe if there's not something that's immediately discernible, maybe they'll say, you know, from the pink bucket, and they'll put something out on the trail. But then you and your friends that you're riding with, your team, or if you're by yourself, you use your a base plate compass. You can't just use a regular compass. You have to use a base plate compass that you can spin the dial to the direction heading that they're asking for. So say it was 80 degrees from the broken stump, you would ride your horse over to the broken stump, set your compass to 80 degrees, and then face that direction and start walking in that direction. And then maybe your teammate or yourself, if you're by yourself, then after you find that direction, you'll go to the, like the tree hit by lightning, turn your base plate compass to the direction that it says to sight to, and then you start walking in that direction. And eventually you've got people triangulating on an area where the objective is going to be hidden, which is generally a pie plate with two letters on it. And so once you get through all 10 stations, you have all of these letters and you can go back to the base camp where you started and yay, you're finished.
Hey, I gotta tell you, this is so cool. This is, we, years ago, before cell phones, we had what we called road rallies, which we would do in cars the same thing.
Okay.
They would give you the map.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And they would give you a speed you had to go, and then they would just give you little blocks that had a drawing of a road, and it would have a Y or a split or a tree or a clue in that little block, and you had to find that little block, and that was your next turn, and you had to get there in a certain amount of time. Ours wasn't who got there the fastest, it was who got there on time. And it was very difficult because you had to, they completely taped your dashboard so you didn't know how fast you were going, and you couldn't tell distances with your odometer. It was so much fun. We did that for a long time. Half the people would be lost half the time. Is that the way it is here?
Right. I think they're usually done in smaller areas, and I don't know how much people get lost, but they do call it, you know, the thinking horseman sport, because it takes a lot of forethought and paying attention to where you are and learning how to use the map and the compass. You get a lot of good skills from it, as I'm sure you did with your road rallies, getting to know the area and
actually how to use a compass.
Yes, exactly.
Well, and then like Amy set some of these up for us, like as a second, we do these Texas Trail Challenges sometimes. And then used to be they were only one day, but people would stay over till Sunday. So she set a lot of these up just for us to do for fun. And she would also have trivia questions and you could get extra points for trivia. Or did we get extra points or did we lose points for the trivia?
I think you got extra points.
We got extra points.
I thought it was fun. I love trivia.
She loves trivia. And I wanted you to...
Not a part of CMO, but I like trivia.
Right. And we had this last weekend, we did it was not an orienteering. We had a map. We didn't have a compass, but we had like landmarks. But she had set up some trivia questions for us on the trail as part of our scavenger hunt. And I wanted her to share the very best trivia question that she had. This last weekend,
I did. It was
one that melted.
It was the what state fair has a butter sculpture each year? Or what? No, it was Iowa. Iowa has a butter sculpture of what animal each year? And then what famous starship captain celebrating his 50th anniversary will also be sculpted in butter this year because he's from Iowa. His character is from Iowa.
Do you know the answer, Glenn?
Captain James T. Kirk. Man.
Yes. Very good. Very good.
I knew the answer to that one.
Right.
The Pennsylvania Farm Show does butter sculptures each year, too.
Oh, do they as well?
Yeah.
Butter is great.
Butter is great.
For the mounted orienteering, I think I did my first one with a mule and donkey association. They had set something similar up. And when I went to that, I was inspired to go to the competitive mounted orienteering site and find out more, you know, about how it's structured and how it's set up so that I could do it myself. And then I did some that were just, I did it. We actually got started with it because my Girl Scout troop was earning their orienteering badge. And we set it up as a way to earn their badge. We set it up for some of my horse friends and they came and did it. And then I've also done it, It's a great thing for a club to do because you can set it up as a fundraiser and you can charge, you know, people to come out and do it, or you can just do it as a fun event for your friends.
Yeah.
To get together with their horses.
So I'm guessing though that being able to use a compass this way could come in handy if you were just out on the trail.
Yes. Anytime you're learning map skills, anytime you're learning to use a compass is good to help you from getting lost when you go out just on your own rides. And it's also beneficial for the horses as well, because they learn, like I said, you have to split up and kind of go to different areas. So if your horse is buddy sour, they just get those little tastes of being separated and it's okay. Cause look, we came back together again and we all survived and there was no need to panic for the horses. And you're not necessarily just following each other one after the other down a trail. You're maybe breaking up, looking at different things, and really working with riding your horse rather than just following down the trail.
So,
and you get to learn how to orient yourself on a map, you know, not just see the map, but say, okay, where am I and which direction am I going in relation to the things around me?
And so then I guess out of, you know, like technology, there's now geocaching on horseback. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, and I can't, you know, I'm not really good at timelines, but I think, I mean, I did start with the orienteering first. And once we had gone and done that a couple times, we're like, oh my gosh, there's this other thing called geocaching. And where competitive mounted orienteering is an actual sport where they have an organization and that you get points, especially if you're in one of those northern states, or you can do it for fun. Geocaching is really is set up as a recreational treasure hunt kind of thing. And you can look online at geocaching.com, or you can download the app for your phone from geocaching.com. And like, I'm in Brookshire right now, and if I go and press, you know, geocaches near me, there are 5,000 geocaches just in this area. And it's really taken off around the world as a fun treasure hunt to do by yourself or with your friends. You may be driving down the road in your car and have some time to kill and you want to go find a geocache, or when you're on your horse, you can do it. Like, there's some set up in the Sam Houston National Forest. I found them on horseback there. And other times I've set them up myself for my friends to find. And what it is you use the GPS coordinates, you know, the longitude and the latitude that you could get on. You can have a dedicated device like a Garmin eTrex or Venture or one of those type things. Or now you can even do it on your smartphones. You can use the latitude, the GPS coordinates. And so you'll punch it. If you're on the geocaching.com or the app, you can just press it and it'll direct you to it. But if you're using a different device like an eTrex, you would have to punch it. You dial it in yourself, the numbers, like the north and then all the numbers and then whatever. And you then follow the arrow to find the hidden treasure box, which may be like an ammunition box that has this full of toys, or it may be like a little camera case bottle hanging from a tree. You never know what it's going to be. Sometimes it's big, sometimes it's small, and they mark that on when you're looking for it. And sometimes you can get a clue, but it's a lot of fun. It's definitely a treasure hunt for the modern time.
Yeah. I mean, the times we've done it have been a lot of fun just using the, and I remember the one time at Perry Haynes Ranch, Maddie, your daughter, was on our team, and she just happened to have the GPS that had all the coordinates in it.
And oh, so you darn. Didn't have to punch him in?
We'd have to punch him in.
Right, because she was probably borrowed mine and was using it. Hey!
And, like, I think one of the apps for the phone that worked the best for this was the iPhone app, I just lost the name of it. There's, like, an iPhone app that works really well for this, but it's not for Android, and now I can't remember, so...
Well, I have the geocaching app from geocache.com. And usually if you're doing an event for geocaching, you will give everybody the coordinates ahead of time and you put them all in your phone. And then again, it's kind of like the orienteering. You have your map and you have your coordinates and you can see, okay, this one's 1 mile away, this one's 2 miles away, and you set up your plan as to which one you're going to go to first. And then once you get there, you know, they're not in plate. Usually the orienteering, the plate will be visible from horseback, but the geocaching, you have to get off your horse most of the time, like look kind of under rocks, inside trees, around bushes. It's definitely a hunt. And you could, you know, if you were setting it up for your friends or your club, you could do it however you wanted, whether you have to get off the horse and search or you can see it from horseback. But generally you have to open some sort of box. And with geocaching, there'll be some sort of little toys or coins or things inside the box, and you take one and you leave one for the next person.
So you leave something new that you found somewhere else.
Yeah, something some people carry little tidbits in their car. You know, like I used to get like the kind of toys that you would get from a gumball machine, or they actually make tags now that are tracked, like. And you can move them from place to place and someone can track where their tag has been. And that's interesting to watch too, because you can see things travel all over the world, because maybe someone will pick it up in Texas and drop it off in, you know, Seattle, Washington. And then the Seattle, Washington person will pick it up and drop it off in Canada. And so, and then the person who finds it in Canada will go on vacation to Hawaii and put it there. And by following the coordinates of the tag, you can see how far it traveled.
Jen put on the chat that, you know, like you could leave behind a petrified McDonald's French fry that you found under the seat.
Yes.
Exactly.
And you also, there's also a little logbook that you sign in and to say that you've been there. And it's, and you know, there's kind of that camaraderie too, that, you know, you see all the other people that have been out searching. And like I said, it's mostly a sport that people do by car or by foot, but then there are also geocaches hidden in place. I personally have found them in the Sam Houston National Forest. I'm sure they're in other places too that have horse trails, but I haven't really searched for those yet.
So it sounds like if you were doing this for fun, you know, like if you and your trail buddies wanted to set something up, you could take elements from both CMO and geocaching and create, like, have the plates on the tree and the trivia questions because they're fun, and then have the coordinates using your GPS, because as we know, getting enough people, you know, you have to do a whole compass class before you can send people out with a compass.
Yes. And so that would be the first part of anything I would do, would be to sit everybody down and teach them how to use their compass and how to use their their GPS instead, because you just send them out there. And
but then I'd have to learn how to use it myself first.
Right, I was just saying the same thing. So that like, I have a GPS, but I use it to tell me how fast I'm going and how far I've gone. I haven't really used the map function of it yet. So I'd have to.
And my favorite thing to do once I learned how to do the geocaching and learn, marking waypoints and things on my map. I mean, on my device, of course, now when I go riding somewhere that I'm not familiar with, I mark my trailer as a waypoint. So if I get away from camp and I'm lost on trail, I can, search. It's kind of like I'm searching for my car as a geocache. I press the waypoint of the car or trailer and it will direct me back. And so I maybe at one point had been lost in the forest, and now I'm following a path to get back to where I started. So I'm not, lost and hungry on the trail.
You're lost, Amy? Does that happen often?
And hungry.
And hungry. Yeah, lost and hungry. Too bad combination. Afraid.
And I'm looking here, and it looks like the Competitive Mounted Orienteering website is NACMO.org.
Yes.
National Association of Competitive Mounted Orienteering. They have a few states, but obviously need some more. I'm surprised Florida's not on this list, actually. But
I feel the project coming on.
Yeah.
I think Kentucky has recently started their chapter. I think that's what I noticed
it looks
when
like
I looked at the map early.
Alabama, Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Washington State. So if you're in one of those areas, check out the website. If you're not and want to get something started, go to NACMO.org. Well, thanks, Amy. We appreciate you stopping by with something different you can do on your pony.
All right. Thank you so much for calling.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
You could do that in carts, too. You could do a carriage version of that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's got so many applications and so much. I mean, because I would imagine it's probably hard to find as many carriage trails as it is riding trails.
That's where we're lucky here in Florida. We have the big forests that have carriage trails. So we're kind of lucky that way. But you're right. Most places, it's tough. You end up on the roads at some point. So now you have a raffle coming up. Tell us about that.
We do. For our fundraising raffle that starts now and goes through February of 2017 is sponsored by our longtime sponsor, Riding Warehouse, formerly Long Riders Gear. They are offering $1,000 worth of gift certificates that we are going to be raffling off. One for $500, one for $300, and one for $200. And the donations for the raffle are $5 for one ticket or $20 for a group of five. You can purchase a single ticket or groups of tickets, as many as you like. And you can get it from if you're an NATRC member, you can get it from your regional director. But we also have a store on the NATRC.org website where you click on the number of raffle tickets and it will let you pay through PayPal or probably even by check. We have just 1,000 that we're selling, so it's not an unlimited, so you have a pretty decent chance of winning the 1,000 tickets, and the drawing will be at our national convention in Chattanooga, Tennessee in February, and you don't have to be present to win. So if your name is drawn and you're not there, you will still win, and it's open to members and non-members. So anyone who might like gear from the Riding Warehouse. They have Western, English, Endurance. They have everything. So,
wow. And you know what? You win a $500 gift card. You can find something to buy anywhere.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, they've got wonderful things. And they, their shipping is free when you order over a certain amount. And if you have to return it, they give you up to a year to.
That is one of the cool things about their company.
And it's free. Yeah. I mean, you can return it for a year and the return shipping is free. I mean, they're just fantastic. We really like them.
And there are trail riders over there too. That work there. Yep.
Yes.
And distance riders, some of them.
Yes, exactly.
And Chattanooga, Tennessee is where the national convention is going to be. You're going to have to go on the Chattanooga Choo Choo. We did that last year for the first time. We stopped and did the Chattanooga Choo Choo on our way to Kentucky.
Oh, definitely. I'll have to do that because I used to live near there, but then I never went to Chattanooga. I mean, I was more centralized in the state. I drive through Nashville, but not usually through Chattanooga.
And there's this very, very famous cheeseburger place downtown, and everybody goes to. And we tried to go after we did the train ride because everybody said you had to go there.
Right.
So we drove in, and it's this really quirky place. But the line was an hour long at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
So apparently it is a very popular cheeseburger.
What's it called?
I cannot remember. Jennifer might remember. I don't remember what it was called. I'll have to look at it. We'll have to find that again because we never ended up eating there because the line was way too long.
We should find out so we can tell everyone to go there and brave. Yeah, that wouldn't give us very much time. We usually just have like an hour and a half.
Well, you wouldn't get in. You wouldn't get into this place.
Right. And they probably don't do call in to go orders.
No, not judging by the line that was outside.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, next guest is ready.
All right, our next guest today is Wayne Talbert, whose horse Windstorm Sienna was inducted into the Hall of Fame of the NATRC this year. Wayne is a longtime NATRC rider and horsemanship judge. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I'm so happy to have you here. So start off by telling us a little about Sienna and, you know, her breed, her age, et cetera. And do you call her Sienna or what do you call her?
Yes, I call her Sienna. She is a Morgan mare. Currently she is 24 years old and retired after 14 years of competition and about 9,000 miles.
Wow.
In the ATRC competition.
That's a lot of miles. So how did you come to own her?
I was brand new to the sport. Well, somewhat brand new. My daughter started riding in 1996, went to a ride over at East Fork Stables, and then went to two or three more the following year, and I volunteered and worked at those rides, and I enjoyed working them, but I said, you know, this is something I'd like to try. And although I'd never ridden a saddle horse before, Sienna was my first horse. I talked to people and said, okay, what kind of horse do I need to get? And they said, well, why don't you consider Morgan? They're pretty solid horses, and a friend of mine had one. My next-door neighbor had one, and I researched them and then went and looked at a couple of horses and rode them. And I was a horrible rider, by the way, because I've not ridden saddle horses before. I didn't even know how to trot a horse, you know.
Hang on.
I
so
bought
you bought your first horse to ride in competition, but you had never really ridden at all. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Not really. Yeah, I had one old horse here.
Isn't that the way everybody does it?
A little bit.
No, it's awesome. He had a goal in mind.
I know. And you know, I think it's so cool, too.
I wanted to ride with my daughter.
Well,
she was a teenager, and I decided before she goes off to school and gets married and does all the things that a young lady does, I needed to spend some time with her, and her thing was horses. I thought, well, if I'm going to do something with my daughter, then I'm going to have to ride a horse. So that was the primary reason that I bought Sienna and got involved with NATRC as a rider.
You know, Wayne, that's a lot of our listeners that are listening right now to this show have come into it, and we have some new auditors, too, that have come into it because their kids were riding, and they went, well, that looks kind of fun. And I think that's the largest growing percentage. I was talking to some people over the weekend. We think that's the largest growing percentage of the horse population right now is parents who got into it because of their kids.
Yeah.
I see that to be true a lot of times with NATRC as both a rider and a judge and a volunteer over the years. We see families come in and the kids ride and then the parents ride. They said, oh, well, that's so fun. I'm going to try that too. So I think you're exactly right.
Well, then I wonder how many of the parents stick with riding and trail riding and other sports long after their kids have decided that they're not interested anymore, especially the girls when they find cars and boys.
Well, I did. I rode just a couple of years with my daughter, and then she went off to college, didn't ride anymore. Well, I'm sorry, she did. She actually was on the equestrian team at the University of the South, but she wasn't in A-track anymore. But I rode and am continuing to ride up into my late 60s now. So I've ridden for close to 20 years, about 18 years.
That's great. So how old was Sienna when you got her, and what kind of training did she have to start with?
She was 5 years old. I think that's correct. She was 92, 96, 98. Yeah, she was coming on to, she was a little over 5 years old. She had been trained, basically green broke, and she could do a bunch of stuff. I'm not quite sure how to tell you this, but anyway, she was broke to saddle. She had been, kind of kept out in the briars and the brambles, so to speak. She was not at the primary facility where this guy, the breeder, kept his horses. She kind of lived off on a place by herself, or not by herself, but out away from the main area there. And so she was used to sort of fending for herself. She was sort of a natural trail horse. I mean, she knew how to take care of herself and so on. So that was very beneficial. That was one thing I always really liked about Sienna, was that she took care of herself. She ate and she drank on the trail. She ate at the trailer. She never really had any kind of digestive problems or colic or anything like that. I think it was because she learned to eat and drink and take care of herself the way she was raised. And then when she went to competition, I tended to go out last in the line of riders in my division, because the first thing out of camp, she would stop and drink. She would take care of herself. And other people, you know, when you're in a competition, people want to pass you, you're holding people up. So I didn't want to do that, and I didn't want to break her habit of drinking, because that's extremely important, is for a horse to stay hydrated on the trail. Because if they don't, you have this sort of negative metabolic cascade, I think is the way one of the veterinarians talked about it, that starts when the horse gets dehydrated. Things start going bad for them.
Right.
But so she never had any of that kind of problem. She just took care of herself, and that was just wonderful. And she was just that way. I didn't train any of that. Okay. I did a lot of training with her, but when I first started, I didn't know anything really about how to ride a saddle horse. I mean, that's just the fact of life. And my horse was somewhat successful despite my lack of training. And I finally decided, I'm ruining this horse. She's better than I am, and I'm just messing her up. So I went to a John Lyons certified trainer, and I said, I need help. I need professional help. I'm messing my horse up. So she worked with me, a lady named Kathy Wilson. She worked with me and Sienna, and she would train Sienna, and then she would train me, and she'd say, Sienna's a lot easier to train than you are. but anyway,
that's usually the case.
We worked together. We worked together, and we got both of us on the same page. And when we did that, then the natural abilities that Sienna already had just flowered. I mean, she really became the quality horse that she, I mean, she always had the potential, but I was able then to help bring that potential out, which I couldn't do when I first got her.
Now, a lot of Morgans are on the smaller side. How big is Sienna?
She's 15 hands even.
Yeah, okay. Because I don't know too many that, you know, get over 15 and a half hands, the ones I've met anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's correct. They tend to run about 14 and a half to 15 and a half. You don't see... It's rare that you see a 16-hand Morgan. Now, yeah. There are some out there, but they're pretty rare.
You know, it's something, because the Morgans are a breed that you don't hear as much about anymore, yet they were the most popular horse in the country in the 1800s, 1900s. That everybody drove Morgans. They had Morgans for riding and driving. That's what they were used for. They were used as your car. They were your Toyota. They got you from point A to point B because they were so reliable, and they didn't break down as easy as some of the other breeds.
Well, and they were, you know, if I use a baseball metaphor, they were sort of like the utility player.
Yep.
They could play multiple positions.
They were the minivan.
They could pinch hit, you know. They could do whatever.
Yeah. And obviously they can do this.
They obviously can. Yes, they can.
Well, now we have some quick questions that we ask about people's horses, and I would love to ask you those about Sienna, if you don't mind. What is Sienna's favorite treat?
Her favorite treat? Almost any kind of horse treat is her favorite treat.
Not picky.
She will eat, like I said, she takes care of herself, and she will eat practically anything you put in front of her. And that, since she's been retired, that's been a little bit of a challenge for me because I have to restrict her time in the pasture and so forth just so she doesn't get crusty necked and get, you know, overweight and run a risk of a problem.
That's my favorite kind of treat, too, by the way. Anything you put in front of me. That's my... What's the weirdest, strange thing or quirk or hidden talent that Sienna has? Like some horses open the gates and, you know, that kind of thing.
No, she doesn't. It's almost the opposite. I mean, Sienna is absolutely the safest horse I've ever been around. I mean, I can trust her to do anything. I would ride her, and I have ridden her. Marking trails, ridden her alone in dangerous places, and never have one iota of concern about it because she is just as rock solid safe as any horse that I can imagine. So if that's quirky, all the other horses I've ridden, you have to be really, really careful where you ride them and how you ride them and so forth. But Sienna was just, she was just a rock. She was just a rock.
You got lucky with this being your first one, by the way, Wayne. You got really lucky.
Oh, I was so lucky. You better believe it. Now, there was one thing about her, and that is she was herd bound. When I rode her in competition, she wanted to be with another horse.
Yeah.
And she would complain and just, she would always do what I ask, but she could take grudging compliance to an art form occasionally because she really was upset
like my
with my decision. Well, she is a mare.
I think we've all known horses like
with
that.
Mares, you have to negotiate with mares. You can't, they're not like a gelding. You can't just tell them what to do and they do it. They get even with you if you aren't reasonable.
Okay, so what, boots or shoes? Did you compete with boots or shoes? Or barefoot?
I competed with shoes.
Shoes, okay.
And Sienna did have a problem. She has limited flexion in her front legs, always has had. And so she was getting sore problems, and so I put aluminum shoes with like a, I think it's a 2-degree elevation on the shoes. And then she's been in those for years and years and did extremely well.
What's the wackiest thing that Sienna ever did at a show?
The wackiest thing she ever did at a ride.
She's not a wacky horse.
I don't ever recall her.
She's not a wacky horse. Yeah, sounds like she was never that horse that got loose and was running around, and never that horse that got into the feed bin and ate everybody else's food.
No, nothing like that. No, she didn't get loose. She didn't run around. I think one time her rope got untied during the night. I went out. She was standing by the trailer eating grass on the ground next to the trailer. I mean, she was just...
Okay,
that,
this
that
is
was
just...
Who she was. She didn't,
I think you're making this up. I think this horse never existed because it...
No, I'm not. I just wish I had another one like her.
Yeah, don't we all?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a question. This is what we always end with. If you could ask your horse one question and she could answer, what would you ask?
I'll have to think about that one a second.
Yeah, that's a hard one. Because
I'm going to give him a second to think, but I want to say that he is managing a competition at, the ride is it's called Big South Fork, right? And it's in...
No, it's actually called Ride the Edge.
Oh, Ride the Edge, there
you go. It's at East Fork Stables. It's close to Big South Fork. It's about 30 minutes from Big South Fork, but it's on a private facility, 12,000 acre facility, called East Fork Stables near Jamestown, Tennessee. This is our 20th anniversary of that ride. Jenny, my wife, Jenny and I have managed it for the past 18 years. This will be our 18th year. So we're having a 20th anniversary celebration this year at the ride.
And it's Labor Day weekend?
Right? The second weekend in September. Okay, always so the second weekend in September.
Okay.
That would be the weekend after Labor Day. It'd be the
weekend
12th and,
Day.
Well, well, let me think. 9th and 10th. Yep.
Yeah.
That weekend. Yeah. Cool.
We
All right.
We have about 50 some riders signed up this year.
And that's in Tennessee?
Yes.
That is in Jamestown, Tennessee.
Okay. And there are people from all over the United States going
to
be there.
And where can we find it, information on? If somebody wants to come out and do this for the first time, where would they go?
They can go on to the NATRC website or the NATRC Region 5 website, which is NATRC5.org, and pull up the ride called Ride the Edge 2016, and all the information is there. Or if they wanted to contact either myself or my wife, who is the ride secretary, I'll give you my number, would be 865-363-7563, and I'll be happy to email any information, ride descriptions, all the information about the ride to the person.
All right, cool.
Send
so we'll
I'll,
end
I'll
with
talk to people about it as well.
We'll end with what you would ask Sienna.
I guess I wouldn't ask her something so much as I would apologize for the first few years that I wrote her. or if I had to ask her anything, I would ask, you know, one of the important things about training a horse is you can train a horse physically, mentally, and emotionally. Most people do physical and mental. Physical, of course, is wet saddle blankets. Mental is teaching them go forward, stop, back, move your shoulder left and right, move your hip left and right. If you do all that, you can do practically anything on the horse. If they're listening to you, it's the emotional thing. So if I had to ask her one thing, it would be, why did you always have to have another horse? Why could you, mm-hmm. I could ride you outside of a competition, at home, barebacked, without a bridle, just put a halter on you and ride you in a halter and barebacked. But when we get in a ride, you had to have another horse. Why? What was the difference?
I'd like to know the answer to that, too, because I have that horse. He'll do anything I ask him to do, but he collars and somebody says he's echolocating because he's trying to make sure there's still somebody else there. But only at the rides.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's because mares are always in a herd, and for whatever reason, they're just looking for that herd out there. And like I said, Sienna will go to her grave being herdbound. She always wants another horse around. No matter how much I worked with her, and like I said, I rode her 9,000 miles in 14 mm-hmm. years. And I rode her in 16 states, transported her all over the country, even went to Canada once for a ride. So we've been everywhere, done everything, but she still wanted another horse around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't blame her.
So my gelding is really a mare. That's what we're saying.
That's it. Yeah, that's what the problem is. Thanks, Wayne. We appreciate you stopping by, and we hope that Sienna gets to eat carrots for a very long time.
She's enjoying her retirement, I can assure you.
Okay. Thanks, Wayne.
Thank you very much.
And you do know they're not all like that, right? I just wanted to make sure you knew that.
Oh, I have another horse right now who's a half Arab, and he makes me appreciate Sienna every day.
There we go. There's the answer. Thanks, Wayne.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I was spoiled like that, too, because my first driving pony was that pony, you know, was the perfect pony. Mm-hmm. And boy, you know, then you get the others after, and it's like, geez. I think,
was like that, too. He was perfect. I mean, I knew nothing, and I didn't know anything about gated horses. And he was fantastic.
So there's the question of the day. Is it easier to get the perfect pony first or to have the challenging pony first? Because once you have the perfect pony, nothing ever lives up to that, right? But then if you have the challenging pony, you always have the chance of getting that perfect pony later.
Is it that the perfect pony is perfect because they took pity on us because we knew nothing about what we were doing?
It's true.
That's what I wonder.
Well, let's take a break for a song. We're going to come back. We have more show. We're going to talk about cooking. We're going to talk about cooking specifically, camp cooking, and how all of that, how you can do that successfully when you're out and about. So we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But first, I thought a little Only in Texas by Dan Roberts. We'll be right back.
Wearing calf roping, cattle ranching, gate opening, buckle wearing, barbecuing, beer drinking, pig roasting, hay baling, friendly driving, fiddle playing, son of a gun. Double hocking, steer tripping, washer pitching, cow tipping, snake shooting, jukeboxing, honky tonking, haggard listening, church going, W voting proud. Where they're from? In Texas, only in Texas. There's pride in the eyes of the ones who wear that brand. Cause it's a whole nother country between the Red and the Rio Grande. Yeah, we got it all, only in Texas. Hauling, bronc busting, bull riding, trail dusting, barrel raising, bulldogging, hat stetching, boots justing, rodeo and wrangler wearing, spur jingling, real cowhand. Beef eating, cattle grazing, two stepping, steer hazing, chip kicking, chili cooking, Lone Star appreciation, pistol packing, deer tracking, Alamo remembering land. Yeah, Texas, only in Texas. There's pride in the eyes of the ones who wear that brand. Cause it's a whole nother country between the Red and the Rio Grande. And we've got it all, only in Texas. Hey, we got it all, y'all, only in Texas.
That was Only in Texas by Dan Roberts. You can find all of his music at oldbootsmusic.com. And Dan has a whole bunch of cool songs like that. So if you want more of him, you can find him there or at iTunes as well. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek. I'm here with Alice, and we are talking all things trail riding today, brought to you by the NATRC. And I did want to mention that tomorrow, Really Bad Ads will be back. So Jamie's going to be here, and we'll have Really Bad Ads tomorrow. So get on Craigslist and find those really bad horse sale ads or trailer sale ads or whatever there is. Every area has some. I'm sure there's some. There's tons of them in Texas. And send them over to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We always have a prize every month, and I'm trying to remember what this month's prize was. Isn't that terrible? I don't remember. The prize this month is a Stretch Tech shoulder relief girth from Total Saddle Fit. And we're talking a $200 girth here. And this is one of the most high-tech girths available on the market today. So get your ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. And Alice, anything that we didn't cover from the beginning of the show? I'm taking a look here to see what we might have missed.
I don't think we
pretty much caught it all. Very good. Now, your next ride is when?
My next competition will be in September at the Pine Grove Giddy Up.
Pine Grove Giddy Up?
Yep. Kim Murphy, who came on a couple months ago to talk about her trail, her building her trail ride. It's her competition. It's the middle of September.
I like
That's
the name.
The third weekend. Yep, the Pine Grove Giddy Up. It's in Pine Grove, Arkansas.
That's very cool. Yeah. All right, Chuck is ready.
Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning.
just a little introduction. Chuck is a former junior rider, and he currently manages rides. And I have heard that he loves to cook outdoors in his outdoor camp kitchen. I heard great raves about your cooking when I was in Colorado, so I thought I'd have you on to talk a little bit about your love of outdoor cooking. How did all that get started?
Well, it got started. My parents originally joined NATRC in 1989. I competed with them as a junior. I left NATRC for several years and then came back into it, and I don't really have time to ride or be involved with the organization in that sense, so I just started volunteering and kind of took over cooking where they left off. So now, I learned from them.
Now, most of us that are horse husbands, we learn to cook because we actually want to eat, and our wives and our wives don't cook. Was that the case with you?
Kinda.
Yeah. See,
home,
I see.
I love to cook. Mm-hmm. I love to bake. All sorts of things like that.
Well, aren't you a stay-at-home dad?
I am. Yes, I am.
Yeah. So your cooking comes naturally.
It does.
Of course, it's easy to cook for kids that just want peanut butter and jelly, right? I mean,
sometimes they can be awfully picky, though. You cook them something and they don't want that, and you cook them something else and they may not want that either.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
So tell me about the setup that you bring to the rides. I had heard from one of the competitors that you have like a big setup that you bring with you. Tell me what all is involved.
Well, I carry all of it in my large fifth wheel trailer. I have two outdoor ovens. I have about four stoves. I also cook some of it inside of the trailer if I need an extra oven or stove. I bring several tables, coolers, got jugs. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm just trying to imagine
this thing.
Right
there.
Do you have a photo of it that you could send me so I can send it on to them? We could post it on the page to show them what your setup looks like. I'm trying to imagine.
I do not have a picture of it. But this weekend, I'm leaving today to go to Mancos, Colorado to manage our Region 3 benefit ride. So I could take a picture of it and send it to you.
Oh, that would be great. So you do, I guess you're doing, are you cooking for the competitors as well as the volunteers or just the volunteer? How many people do you cook for?
It just depends. Most of the rides this year, it has been the riders and the volunteers. Some rides are just the volunteers or maybe just one or two meals. It's everybody. It just depends on what ride management asks for.
Okay. So what's your favorite thing to cook for a ride?
My favorite thing to cook.
Like recipes, man.
Probably
recipes.
My most favorite meal was actually at the Island in the Sky ride 2 weeks ago. It was a completely new meal that I had done, but we did Navajo tacos.
Okay.
And I cooked all the meat ahead of time and had all that. And then I have a friend that is a Navajo lady that she made all of the fry bread for us. And people loved it. I wasn't sure if people were going to like that, but they really enjoyed that. That's probably been my most favorite meal so far.
Did she make the fry bread there?
No, she made it ahead of time. She's not involved in any TRC. She's just a friend of mine. And she made it ahead of time, and we just kept it in a cooler, and I took it up to the ride.
Does she cook it the old-fashioned way, the fry bread?
She's very traditional in her cooking.
Well, they used to cook it... Yeah, I was going to ask how she did it.
I don't know exactly how her setup is. She cooks it for a lot of different events that ask her. She also goes out to Shiprock, New Mexico a lot, and she cooks for their fairs. I know she does a lot of it outside, which I think would be difficult. But I've never actually seen her setup of how she does it.
Because I got to have in Navajo tacos when I was a teenager. We were in New Mexico doing a mission trip with my church, and the Navajo made us tacos. And I remember, and then for years after that, we used that for fundraising at our own church, because it was so popular and not something they did in Missouri very often. So,
yeah,
you don't see Navajo tacos in Missouri much. So,
yeah,
So, like, what kinds of things do you make for breakfast? I mean, do you, like, make burritos, or do you make quiches, or, like, you do it ahead of time? Or,
I do. Burritos, anything that I can make ahead of time, I do. It just saves time at the ride. Burritos are normally a really big hit. I make breakfast burritos a lot. Green chili burritos, since I'm from New Mexico. I have made pancakes. We have done biscuits and gravy, fried potatoes and sausage and eggs. At Island in the Sky, we also, the ride manager had a recipe for French toast casserole. And so that was a new thing that we did up there. And that was actually a big hit. I wasn't sure it was going to turn out, but it did. And everybody loved that.
So how are your ovens? Are they, like, do they run on propane, or do you plug them in and run
them
on a generator?
Yeah, they run on propane.
I was just wondering.
Yeah, I bring about 6 propane bottles total for all the 2 ovens and all the cookers, and you just hook them up and they're good to go.
So is there something that you've always wanted to cook at a ride that that you haven't gotten to do yet?
I'm constantly always struggling trying to find new recipes and things that will work. It's not always easy to cook, you know, out in the middle of nowhere for 100 people. I can't think of anything off the top of my head that I've been wanting to cook. Normally it's just asking people what they would like to have, to try to find new ideas to cook things.
Okay. So if you're new at cooking in camp, but you don't want to just have cold food, is there something you would recommend to people, to start with for the first time? You know, you know, people who aren't used to cooking outdoors, is there something really simple that you would recommend people start with?
I would say probably the most easy meal to make is spaghetti. The only downside to that is you have to have a lot of, you know, pots of water boiling, and you have to have the burners to go with that. But as far as the meal itself, that is an extremely easy meal to cook for everybody. And cheap, too. It's very inexpensive to have that.
I've done spaghetti, but I've always just made it at home and then put it in the freezer and then thawed it out in the microwave.
Yeah.
Which isn't near as exciting. So.
Yeah.
Well,
this weekend, we're actually having a... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. This weekend,
Weekend, for our Region 3 benefit ride, we are having a full Thanksgiving meal. We're having turkey, stuffing, sweet potatoes, mashed potatoes, fruit salad. We're having the whole works.
Are you going to fry the turkeys?
So that works. I'm sorry?
Are you frying the turkeys there? Is that how you're going to do it?
No, we have looked around town, and of course this time of year we could not find turkeys at any store around town, but there was a farmer's market that ordered them for us, and they cooked them, cut them up for us, and they're all in bags, and we just have to heat it up. So that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, but the spectacle of the fried turkey would be so much fun.
It would.
Either that, or he'd be burning the camp down. One or the other, it's going to happen.
Well,
either way,
yeah,
it's kind of. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't know if you've ever checked, if you've ever watched the Food Network or Alton Brown. He has a, on Good Eats, he did a whole episode on frying a turkey, and he had like this dike thing set up, you know, where you lower the turkey by a pulley and so you can stand really far away from it. It was hilarious.
We've fried a number of turkeys. I do love fried turkey. It's one of my favorites. It is good.
Yeah.
I've only had it once.
You've never had fried turkey?
Myself, but I've never had
I've been promised one this Thanksgiving, though.
Oh, it's so good. It's just so much different than baked. It really is, because it's really good.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like fun. So what meat do you usually have on a Saturday night? Like, usually we have a potluck or something. Is there a particular fan favorite?
Brisket is normally very popular with everyone. And it's not difficult. I normally buy brisket at Sam's Club. It's already pre-cooked, so I just have to pull it apart and put barbecue sauce on it and heat it up. So it's a very easy meal. Tacos are also another big hit on Saturday night. Pulled pork. I've done that a lot.
Pulled pork is good. I just got this thing you might want to add to your kitchen. And I accidentally ended up with 2. But this thing called an Instant Pot, and you can like brown and saute and pressure cook and slow cook. And since I got two, I decided I'd stick one in the horse trailer and leave one in the house.
An Instant Pot.
It's called an Instant Pot.
I never heard of it.
make them in. Well, I was at someone's house and they made a pot roast in it, and it took 45 minutes from start to finish using the pressure cooking part. And I was just, and then this last weekend at a fun trail thing, someone was making egg, like little mini egg muffins, like little mini omelets in it. And it took like 10 minutes. They are less. I mean, I don't even know how long it took to actually cook it, well, but
I'm looking here. I'm actually on Walmart's website, and it's like a cross between a crock pot and a pressure cooker.
Yes. And you could also saute and brown. So you only need one pot. Like if you're supposed to brown the meat, you brown the meat in the pot, and then you can put it on slow cook or pressure cook or whatever.
And it's got all kinds of settings on it, soup, rice. Yeah, it's got all kinds of settings. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
There's even a setting for porridge. Who the hell makes porridge anymore?
Oatmeal. Just like, I do oatmeal in my overnight crock pot. It's good.
I didn't know that we still use that word anymore.
It was probably came from Scotland or something. Maybe
that's right. It's made in Ireland.
Which makes me wonder why they don't have a setting for haggis. Well, thank you so much, Chuck. Good luck this weekend with your...
Thank you.
Your competition, and take pictures of your setup so we can post them on the webpage, because that would be awesome.
Okay.
Hey, have fun.
Take pictures of the food too, so you can make us all hungry.
Yeah, that's right. I am hungry now, actually.
I will do that.
Yeah. Thanks, Chuck.
It's time for breakfast. Thank you.
Okay. Bye. Okay. Thank you, guys.
I still have always wanted, it's on my bucket list to work at a chuck wagon at a ranch sometime. I've always wanted to do the chuck, but I actually want to drive the chuck wagon too. So... it's still on my bucket list. One of these days, I'm going to get that done.
Yeah, I want to do that. I want to go on a ride that has a chuck wagon. I don't want to work the chuck wagon.
I want to go on the same ride, only I'll do the cooking.
There you go. And we could do the show live from the
make
chuck
wagon. Make cornbread and the cast iron pans and the whole thing.
Yeah, I'd burn myself. I made bacon in the oven. I make bacon in the oven because it's less mess. And I was using my iron skillet the other day, and I take the bacon out and I cook my eggs in the iron skillet on the stove when I'm done. Well, stupid me forgot that the pan had just come out of the oven. I'm just like, I'm you.
We've all done that.
I didn't touch it for very long.
No, you don't. That's one thing. You don't touch it for very long. Or you do and your mind doesn't tell, you know, you're standing there holding it, it's burning, and you're going, I should put this down. And your mind's going, you should put this down, but your hand isn't putting it down.
Kind of like getting electrocuted.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing. You know, I always wanted to do, if I was to splurge and buy, I think the first, if I won the lottery and I would have a carriage collection, one of the first things I would buy would be a chuck wagon. I would always love to own one of those. Chuck wagon's something you could put, like, you could use that as a display piece in your living room if you had a big enough house.
That reminds me of when I was a kid and we went to a furniture store and they had like a stagecoach bunk bed, and I always wanted that.
Oh, Jennifer, that's an idea. When we win the lottery, I can redesign the kitchen to look like a chuck wagon.
Oh, there you go.
Well, that's cool. I have a permanent chuck wagon in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
You have the spoke chandeliers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. My friend Annette has one of those in her living room, and I love it, and she hates it, but just like, no, it goes with the house. It's
maybe
like
not the horse, though. Maybe we won't have the horse in the kitchen.
No, the chuck wagon.
Just the chuck wagon. That'd be better. All right, where can people find out more about the NATRC?
They can find out about NATRC at www.natrc.org.
And real quick again, the raffle is going to happen at the National Convention?
Yes, and the National Convention is in February, and I should have that on my calendar, which I will tell you
February
in just a second.
Gotta
switch to the calendar there. Otherwise, it was going to make me like search through a bunch of days. It is February the 17th and 18th. Okay. In Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Right up the street from us.
Yes.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Alice. We appreciate you stopping by. We learned a little bit about mounted orienteering, about cooking at camp, and also about Sienna, one of the Hall of Fame horses.
And next month, I've already got some really good guests lined up for next month, so everybody should tune in. I've got a guy that's going to come in and talk about how to build your own trails.
Oh, cool. Very good. Yeah. Very good. Cool. Sounds good. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow morning on Horses in the Morning here at 9 a.m. Eastern. And Jamie will be here. We'll be having a little bit of fun, of course, catching you up on all things Olympics.
Thank you, guys.